Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? You are locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, coming to you on this Thursday, June 13th, 2019. I really hope you guys are having a great week out there. I know. This is the state that we live in, right? You know, pretty nice to start the week, 80 degrees, and now it's just cold and rainy. You know, I thought I could... You know, I had a moment earlier this week where I said, okay, I can put away my hoodies at least until like August, right? Like late August or early September, something like that. But no, it's Michigan. Always keep a hoodie or a jacket on hand because you just never know what's coming your way. All right. So it's gloom and doom outside, but it's always 70 degrees and sunny here on WKAR's Current Sports. A lot to get to on today's Current Sports. I want to talk about last night's Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final. You guys know me. I rarely watch hockey, if ever. If it's the playoffs, if the Wings happen to be in the playoffs, still waiting on that to return. Still waiting on Hockey Town to return to Hockey Town glory, right? Or if it's late in the playoffs, I'll catch a game or two. But Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, you know I wasn't missing that. So I tuned in last night and watched pretty much the entire game. You know, I had my laptop going as I'm watching it, but my gosh, man. You know, Game 7, you want it to be more exciting than that, right? And this was a blowout. Wasn't even close. And, you know, the name that kept popping up, and this is what our very own Jack Kerwin commented on yesterday, but Jordan Binnington. I heard that name at least 25 times last night, I felt like, from the great Doc. He was fantastic. He was absolutely fantastic. Boston could not score on that young man. He was amazing and was really the key factor for me in blanking. Well, I mean, they did score one goal. They didn't blank him. I mean, they did score one goal, just one. But it felt like a shutout, didn't it? He was really the guy for me that made the difference last night, along with a few others as well. You know, Ryan O'Reilly as well. He was great. So I watched it last night, but I was very disappointed because I thought it was going to come down to the wire and maybe go to overtime. And then, yeah, this thing was over pretty early, in my opinion. So I'll have further thoughts on it in just a moment. I'm sure Alec Rio and Jack Kerwin have some thoughts on that Game 7 last night. Also, want to comment on Game 6 tonight of the NBA Finals, as the Toronto Raptors hope to close out the series against the Golden State Warriors in the Bay. Can they get the job done? That is the question. We'll also be diving into just a small debate between Connor Mathis and I on who is the king of basketball on planet Earth right now. Is it Kevin Durant or is it Kawhi Leonard? We'll debate that. And Deontay Davis. You know, maybe it's fitting that we didn't get a chance to comment on Deontay Davis, DD, yesterday. You know, we talked a lot about Connor Cook and his struggles in the professional ranks of the NFL. And then we were supposed to go to Deontay Davis, but due to time, we couldn't. And Deontay, after being cut for another time in the NBA, he has been picked up. He was waived by the Atlanta Hawks, I should say. I shouldn't say cut. He was waived by the Atlanta Hawks. But he has been picked up signing with the Houston Rockets. All right, I want to comment on that story, and I'll bring you specifics of that signing with Houston in just a moment. And then we will bring you another edition of Jemele Hill's journey. Jemele's journey, of course, you know, you guys know who tuned in last week. I sat down with famed sportscaster and media powerhouse Jemele Hill, MSU grad, Detroit native. We sat down for about 40 minutes, like 2 months ago, when she was in town to receive an alumni award from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences here at MSU. And, you know, the conversation was so compelling that we have made it a month-long special. Last week, I brought to you Jemele's journey, her story, you know, how she went from, you know, a student here at Michigan State, you know, chasing the journalism dream, to working at ESPN, and then the whole Donald Trump tweet, and now writing for The Atlantic, and, you know, she has her very own podcast that's also gaining a lot of traction, some big-time guests on that. So how did that transformation happen? We brought to you that story last week, Thursday. And today, I want to bring you guys in a compelling conversation centered on Serena Williams. And you'll get Jemele Hill's thoughts on just some of the backlash that the tennis superstar in Serena Williams has gotten anytime she has spoken out about the unfairness in the world of tennis when it comes to, you know, female athletes within the sport and just female athletes in general, and also inequality here in America when it comes to minorities. And you kind of see the similarities between Jemele Hill and Serena Williams, right? They both are very outspoken when it comes to those two topics specifically. All right, so you get a chance to hear what Jemele has to say concerning Serena Williams. You don't want to miss that. We'll do all of that while inviting you all, beautiful people, to be a part of the hour. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. The Facebook live stream, just not working today. It's really frustrating me. I was talking to Alec Rio behind the glass, and I really just, I'm up in arms about the whole thing. So anyway. We may or may not get the live stream up, but again, you can listen on your radio. Hopefully you're doing that right now, or you're listening to the live stream at WKAR.org. You can stream right online. Or you may be even listening, you know, later on in the day, courtesy of the podcast version of the show. However you're listening, thank you so much. You can weigh in by at least, you know, you can shoot us a comment on Facebook.com/WKAR News, even though the stream isn't up right now, or you can tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR.
Oh, I give a rat's ass about Twitter.
Yeah, I know, right? Twitter is just, I feel you, brother. I feel you. But if you care about Twitter, you can tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. You know what's next. Here are your quick hit headliners. Start here. After 52 years of waiting, St. Louis finally has won Lord Stanley's Cup. After being in last place in the NHL on January 2nd and not winning a single game in the Stanley Cup Finals up until this season, the Blues were heavy underdogs coming into this series. They topped the Boston Bruins, however, in Game 7 last night for all the marbles, 4-1 your final. Ryan O'Reilly and Alex Pietrangelo.
There you go.
You got it. Oh, boy. I was nervous reading that. Pietrangelo Both National Dakotas, you know, it's like a game behind the glass. Anytime a name comes up, they're like, uh-oh, is Al going to nail this one or mess it up?
Okay, so you were able to pronounce that just fine. But early in the week, you butchered like three or four really easy names and really easy words.
Connor, those were not easy. You, I feel like you purposely did that, too. Like, I just want to ruin Al's day right now. Let me just throw in a bunch of names. Those were tough names.
They were not.
Earlier, Monday, what you threw at me, we need to go back and watch the tape.
We're going to review that.
Review that. Look at the reading notes for Monday and get back to me, okay? But and probably, I probably nailed Petrangelo, Jack. Because I watched the Stanley Cup Finals last night. Now, I think that was probably one of the names that subconsciously was in my brain while doing work and watching the game.
Well, he's the captain of the Blues, so that would make sense. And actually, props to you, because there are actually hockey broadcasters who sometimes refer to him as Peter Angelo. So, Peter. You're better than those guys.
Wow. All right. I'm feeling good now. Even though the live stream's down, I'm feeling better now that I nailed that name. But both of those outstanding players last night notched a goal and an assist. And Zach Sanford and Brayden Schenn or Schenn?
Schenn.
Schenn. See that? I get Petrangelo right and then I mess up Schenn. Also score for the Blues in the win. Alec, what in the world went down last night? First off, before we get to this sound bite, we got a Stanley Cup bite we were going to play for you. But game seven, I'm thinking this thing is going to be close. I was a little excited to watch it. And then just a complete blowout. I feel like Boston laid an egg last night.
Yeah, Boston got completely outplayed. Like, there was complete ice out going on. Jordan Binnington played stellar. There was a couple saves that honestly could have been save of the year that he had last night. And Boston really just couldn't get anything going, no matter if they had the power play or they were going full strength. Nothing could work. And I was honestly hoping that Binnington would get the shutout at this point, but I think it was Grizzlecheck scored with about 2 minutes left, and it was on an empty net, so that kind of spoiled the shutout. But nonetheless, Binnington played out of his mind.
He was great. I mean, they had a highlight montage. And by the way, I didn't know Tirico was a part of that broadcast team. Had no idea. I mean, Mike can do anything, right? I had no
anything.
Idea he was broadcasting hockey. But I saw him, and they had like a highlight package showing all of Binnington's like saves going into the third period, I believe, and it was just remarkable. Also want to note that Mackenzie McEgger, he is a member of the St. Louis Blues, and he became the latest Spartan to win the Stanley Cup last night as the Blues defeated the Boston Bruins. All right, we do have a montage for you as the Blues beat the Bruins in Game 7.
Dumped by Sammy Blay, sharp angled shot, rebound, O'Reilly to Blay, up top Petrangelo, fakes the shot, passes across, Bomeister takes the shot, he scores! Grizzly comes in off the blue line. Pasternak threw the puck up the middle. And there's Jaden Schwartz with less than 15 seconds to go. In on a forward. Drops the puck back. Petrangelo to the net. Scores! Again for Jay Bomeister. Jaden Schwartz got the center. Dump the puck in. Tarasenko on front. Score! Brayden Schenn with a one-timer on a pass from Vladimir Tarasenko. Bomeister to O'Reilly and back in. David Perron protects the puck along the boards. Now he's going to go to the net. Shoveled in front. It's 4-0 now. With a 4-1 win and a Stanley Cup. Counting the seconds down in St. Louis. Because after 52 years, the St. Louis Blues have won the Stanley Cup.
All right, again, a montage of the St. Louis Blues beating the Boston Bruins to win Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Congratulations to St. Louis. Quite a moment. I know a long time coming for you guys, and live it up. Celebrate it, all right? You deserve it. Okay, Deontay Davis wasn't an NBA free agent for long. The former Muskegon High School and Michigan State star was claimed off of free agency waivers by the Houston Rockets on Wednesday, according to a report from Stadium. The claim comes 2 days after Davis was waived by the Atlanta Hawks. The Rockets are now Davis's fifth team in less than 3 years since he was drafted in the second round of the 2016 draft. Also, on Tuesday, Sports Illustrated released its list of 117 players who could win the 2019 Heisman Trophy. Yes, that is certainly a lot of people and covers a lot of bases, but We'll give the two Spartans some love here as senior quarterback Brian Lewerke was one of 15 signal callers listed in Group 3. Good quarterbacks on good or pretty good teams. That's what it was quoted as saying. Again, that category, Group 3, good quarterbacks on good or pretty good teams. And senior linebacker Joe Bocci was a part of, quote, Group 10 defensive playmakers. So there you have that. Again, Sports Illustrated's list of 117 players who could win the 2019 Heisman Trophy. All right, everybody needs help once in a while, even Michigan's athletic director, Ward Manuel. Michigan enlisted a search firm, Turnkey Search, to identify, recruit, interview, and evaluate potential candidates. The cost for what amounted to be about a week worth of work was $75,000. Search firms have become really the norm for filling high-profile college sports jobs, and Turnkey's rate was on par with previous reports for similar services. So when John Beilein abruptly left Michigan for the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers, Michigan needed a new coach. And by that Thursday, Manuel and Turnkey president and CEO Lynn Perna, a Michigan alum, were signing a contract to work together. Now, the agreement stated that Turnkey would be the sole entity other than Michigan Athletics representatives to communicate with candidates about the position. Schools view this as a major benefit of a search firm, according to industry sources, as it allows an AD to gauge a candidate's interest without it becoming public knowledge. So this is pretty beneficial. But, man, that's a pretty hefty bill, right? $75,000. Again, Turnkey helping AD Ward Manuel fill that vacant Michigan men's basketball position, which, of course, went to Juwan Howard. All right, and speaking of John Beilein, in a landmark move for the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers have hired California's women's basketball coach, Lindsey Gottlieb, to be an assistant on former Michigan coach John Beilein's staff. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, he broke the news on Twitter on Wednesday afternoon. Quote, in a landmark appointment for the NBA, the Cavaliers are hiring University of California Berkeley women's head coach Lindsey Gottlieb to be an assistant coach on John Beilein's staff, becoming the first women's college basketball head coach to then become an assistant coach in the association. Pretty remarkable stuff, and props to John Beilein for that move. That's awesome. All right, the Detroit Lions have traded tight end Michael Roberts to the New England Patriots for a conditional 2020 seventh-round pick. This is what head coach Matt Patricia had to say. Quote, we have good competition in the room right now. We had an opportunity to move on from Mike and hopefully potentially get something moving forward. So it was a good opportunity for us as a team to do that and to build our program long term. So, again, Michael Roberts to the New England Patriots. Again, you're starting to see this Detroit Lions and New England Patriots connection really play out time and time again. So, and, again, there are so many players on the roster for the tight end position for the Lions right now. So, not surprised there. The Detroit Tigers, before yesterday's matchup, have only won one game in their last six. Well, now make it two of their last seven as they narrowly defeated the last place in the AL Central, Kansas City Royals, 3-2 yesterday. Brandon Dixon, Miguel Cabrera, and Ronnie Rodriguez all got ribbies in the victory, including the go-ahead run in the top of the eighth inning. The Tigers are now 25-39 and are still fourth in the AL Central. Next game tonight, 8:05 p.m. against the Royals. And sad news here, no word has been at least released publicly as to how this happened, but former Ferris State quarterback Kyle Parrish, who played two seasons for the Bulldogs and held a team record for total yards in a game, sadly passed away this week on Tuesday. The 33-year-old Parrish died in California. Funeral arrangements are pending and are through Diamond and Shannon Mortuary in Garden Grove. He transferred to Ferris State after two seasons, Compton Junior College in his native California. He played in 19 games with the Bulldogs over two seasons in 2008 to 2009, had 2,092 career passing yards on 181 of 339 attempts with 9 TDs. He also rushed for 300 yards on 137 carries and 2 TDs. I went to Kyle's Facebook page this morning, and there has been just an overflow of love and support and condolences flowing to Kyle and his family. And there has also been a group. What do they call it? It's like a fundraiser set up. I forget what website they they have there, Alec, to do that. Or FundMe, GoFundMe. I think GoFundMe account. Excuse me, has been set up for Kyle's funeral. But again, don't know how this happened. Again, word has not been released publicly as to how it happened. But Kyle Parrish, who again, if you just go on his Facebook page, this was a beloved young man gone way, way too soon at the age of 33. Okay, to less important matters. Again, if you would like to join the hour, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Working on this live stream. Can't guarantee that we'll get it up at some point throughout this hour. But again, you can weigh in. You can comment on our Facebook page still at WKAR News. Or tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News. Welcome to this Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. If you're just now tuning in, let's get right to it. Stanley Cup Finals last night. Bit of a snooze fest. Thought it was going to be a close one. I was hoping that it was going to be a close one. Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, that win went to St. Louis. First Stanley Cup win in franchise history. 52 years of waiting. 4-1 the final. And correct me if I'm wrong, fellas, but I believe the Conn Smythe Trophy went to O'Reilly, right? Ryan O'Reilly got it. And I saw the it kind of reminds me of every commissioner not named Adam Silver, but I believe the commissioner was out there on the ice, right? And he got completely booed.
Yep.
What's up with that?
Too many lockouts, too many missed games ever since he's taken the mantle. And then there have been rumors that he's not going to allow NHL players to participate in the Olympics the next time it rolls around, and players and fans haven't reacted well to that either.
Really? Why? Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you allow your players to
participate? Because he doesn't want it to interrupt the NHL schedule, because the Olympics is a couple weeks during the NHL schedule. So that's his rationale behind it. And actually, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think NHL players were in the last Olympics for that
reason.
They were not. Yeah, that's right. They weren't. And I don't expect that to hold up, because Alex Ovechkin's one of the best players in the NHL, and he's threatened to go back to Russia if NHL players aren't allowed to play in the next Olympics, because he wants to win a gold medal with Russia. But
makes sense.
Yeah, no, Gary Bettman is not well received.
No, I mean, the boos
NHL
were
circles.
Yeah, the boos are ringing down. I mean,
absolutely.
It,
and
came out.
And actually, Vegas last year, those fans deserved credit, because it was their first year in the NHL, and yet when the cup was presented in Vegas, they knew to boo Gary Bettman. So good on them.
They're already
adhering to tradition. Right.
And when LA won the Stanley Cup in 2014, they all cheered for him, so they didn't know what was going on. So,
they had no
idea. So props to Vegas.
Props to Vegas. They understand the tradition of booing Gary Bettman. But I just got to ask, fellas, I mean, how in the world did this happen last night? Because I think the obvious answer here is Jordan Binghamton. He was absolutely fantastic. I mean, that young man, and I love how, you know, they talked about, and we've highlighted this on Current Sports as well, his journey to get where he is in the NHL, you know, trying to become an NHL goalie is very tough. And you are going to, have to really earn your dues, improve yourself in other areas, in small towns, and Jordan has certainly done that. And this kid is just a stud. He stepped up every shot that Boston tried to take at him. He was there, and he was brilliant in that game. The rookie goalie, he saw 32 shots, and he stopped 33 of them.
I think the other way around. Saw 33 shots, got 32 of them.
He saw 32 shots.
You said he saw.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, you're the other way around.
Thank you.
You.
Math. That's why I'm a journalist. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Jack. So, in your guys' eyes, how surprising was this? And I, also in the foreseeable future now that St. Louis has accomplished this, do you think they're going to be a legit player when it comes to winning a cup or being a contender for a cup in years to come?
Well, the second part of that question, it's just going to be hard to tell because, you know, we'll see if what Jordan Binnington did in this playoff run, if it's sustainable. It's a very small sample size because he only started in about 30 regular season games prior to this playoff run. So is this the real Jordan Binnington or was he on a hot streak in the playoffs? That's going to be really telling as to, you know, whether this is sustainable from the Blues perspective or not. How surprised was I? Are you talking about the outcome of Game 7 or are you talking about the Blues winning the series as a whole? What
both,
do you mean?
Both.
Well, I predicted the Blues yesterday that they would win this game, so yeah. I wasn't tremendously surprised by it. Going into this series, I certainly thought Boston was going to win just because on paper you'd look at them and you think they're the better team. They're the more offensive team, and they had been so dominant in these playoffs leading up to this series. But you know what? They outshot the Blues 12-4 in the first period, and yet they were down 2-0 on the score sheet. And that played right into the Blues' hands because although they'd been outplayed to that point, they had the lead and they could kind of play their brand of hockey where they kind of shut the game down and they let everything come to them. And they play a lot of trap once they get a lead. Mm-hmm. And it's why they very, very rarely relinquish leads. And you saw that in the playoffs this year. I think the stat was something like they were 9-1 in these playoffs when they were winning after two periods. So, you know, although the Bruins were probably the better team in terms of scoring chances early on in the game, the Blues capitalized on the chances they created for themselves. And then from there, even though the Bruins outshot them in periods 2 and 3, and they had some high danger scoring chances, there weren't as many as you'd expect given the shot total they finished with.
And that's another point I want to make as well. When listening to the announcers, they thought that, and I don't know who was making this point, but I heard them make the point that they felt like the Bruins were maybe a little bit too cautious, maybe a little bit too tentative, should have been more aggressive earlier on.
Sure.
And that's the thing that, you know, when you talk about a game seven, you know, I kind of worried about that as well, because any game seven, no matter what sport you're talking about, there's nerves out there and you don't want to do anything that's going to jeopardize your team. Right.
Yep.
So you start to walk on eggshells.
Teams play close to the vest.
They play close to the vest. And they felt like, I forget who the announcer was that made this point, but he felt like that's what Boston was doing early on.
Sure. But you know what? There was actually one, I didn't see the goal in real time because I was still at work, but actually one fatal flaw that kind of cost the Bruins was the second goal. Brad Marchand, who's one of their better players, has kind of a reputation for being a dirty player, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, did he have like an open lane and didn't pull the trigger there?
No, well, what caused the second goal for St. Louis was just a bad line change. They were slow getting over to the bench, and the puck didn't get in deep, so St. Louis took advantage of that, and they got an odd man rush and scored. So,
right.
You know, mistakes like that can be, they can be very dangerous in a game seven just because, for the point you laid out, teams play close to the vest, so you don't see as many gutsy plays, you don't see as many fatal mistakes because of that. So yeah. When one happens, it can really bite you.
Definitely. What about you, Alec? Again, you know, Binnington becoming the first ever rookie goalie to win 16 playoff games in a single season. Quite remarkable.
Where'd you see that stat?
I'm reading here. This is sportingnews.com.
Okay, because Alec and I were talking about it earlier, and he's not the first goalie to win a Stanley Cup, because actually the Penguins
the first
goalie,
rookie goalie.
First rookie goalie to win.
Right.
He's actually not, but okay. I guess he's the first one to win all 16 games.
Yeah, it says here, Binnington becomes the first ever rookie goalie to win 16 playoff games in a single season. What did you make of last night, Alec, and how surprised were you and how lopsided this outcome was.
Yeah, this is definitely the opposite of what I expected, because I had thought, you know, since the Blues won away Game 6, I thought that they were going to take all this momentum back to the TD Garden Game 7 and come out. I thought it was going to be the opposite. I thought Boston was going to win 4-1 in like a really like magnificent ice tilt kind of victory, but it wasn't that way. And Ryan O'Reilly and Alex Pietrangelo is such a valuable offensive defensive player, and he can get involved on those odd man rushes like Jack was talking about, and that was that second goal that he was also talking about, where there was a bad line change, and it was Jaden Schwartz took advantage of it by getting past the defender and getting that awesome one-time pass to Pietrangelo to make it 2-0 with a couple seconds left in the first period. But there was just a lot of outplaying in terms of like ice vision. You know, the St. Louis Blues were getting it across. There's a bunch of one-time, you know, pretty passing going on. Like, just all tangents, the Blues seem to have the advantage over Boston in this game.
Definitely. And now they are the champs of the hockey world. So, congratulations to St. Louis. I was watching some of the, also on social media, some of the coverage locally out in St. Louis, and it was just absolutely crazy. People celebrating out there. I don't know. Have they set a date yet for the parade? No, I don't know if those details have been released yet.
Probably not, but you'd have to imagine it would be Saturday.
Yeah, this weekend, right? Yeah. I mean, the weekend is right around the corner. I mean, one day away. So congratulations to St. Louis, though. I was just hoping for a better game. Also, I want to give you guys a quick update concerning one of my favorite events in the world of golf, the U.S. Open. I've been also watching that throughout the morning, Pebble Beach out in Cali. Before I die, I just want to play one round at Pebble Beach. That course is so beautiful. It's so incredibly hard. I'm glad that the USGA finally decided that, okay, seeing final rounds that look like +5 and +7 and +8 are a bit ridiculous. Let's stop making the golf course like trying to play on ice, all right, and really make this thing realistically challenging. We like seeing birdies as fans, right? We don't like seeing frustrated golfers. If we want to see that, then we just go play around at Forest Acres here in East Lansing, okay? So I love what they've done with the course, and Tiger Woods will tee off around 5 o'clock. I've been getting that message in my DM since this morning. And right now, Scott Piercy leads the field through 13 at 4 under. Three players tied at 3 under, nipping on Piercy's heels right now, and John Rahm, Ricky Fowler, and Gary Woodland. Rahm through 10, Fowler through 8, Woodland through 7.
What's it take to play around a beach or play around a golf at Pebble Beach? Is it exclusive?
It's exclusive, yeah. Man. You got to have like...
got to know people.
It's like playing at Augusta, you know what I mean, at the Masters. You got to have some pull there.
Yeah.
They just don't let anybody on that course. It's gorgeous, though. Right off the beach. Oh, it's beautiful. It is beautiful. It's a little chilly there, though. And I think those conditions have kind of been playing out when it comes to a few golfers out there. It's like in the 60s, a little bit windy, but it's a beautiful course. All right. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll bring to you part 2 of our month-long special centered on a chat that I had with media powerhouse, media staple, Jemele Hill. Today, she talks about the outspokenness of Serena Williams. That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. As many of you know by now, hopefully, if you've been tuning in since last week, I have been working on multiple pieces throughout the month of June, which began last week on Thursday. Each and every Thursday, I'm bringing to you a snippet of my chat that I had with Jamel Hill, who is an MSU alum, a former broadcaster at ESPN. Here in the state of Michigan, when she graduated Michigan State, she became a sports writer for the Detroit Free Press as well. Has gone on to do some pretty big things, really getting national acclaim and notoriety during her time at ESPN. She left ESPN not too long ago. I think it reached a point where she just wasn't happy anymore because of how her hosting situation when it comes to the 6 o'clock Sports Center slot was going. And I'm going to bring that to you next week. All right. So she really dives into why she left ESPN and what happened at ESPN. And we highlighted the whole Donald Trump tweet on last week's edition, the premiere edition of Jamel's Journey, where she talked about how that caused some strain at the worldwide leader as well. But today, what I want to do in part two is bring to you a conversation with Jamel and I centered on tennis star Serena Williams, who has not always been well received for her outspokenness for the rights of women and minorities. I mean, at times, we've seen Serena when she speaks up or has some kind of is troubled by something when it comes to those two areas, the rights of women and minorities. She gets this backlash, and in my opinion, it's totally unfair. Jamel Hill explains why she gets that backlash, why that exists.
We've seen many male athletes speak out against social injustice. I mean, back to the Muhammad Ali days and Jim Browns of the world, right? Lou Alcindor. Talk about Serena Williams, because it seems like whenever Serena comes out, shows some kind of aggressive take on something, it's just her. There's a backlash, an undertone that's there, right, when it comes to public perception. What do you think of Serena Williams when she does get that kind of backlash in the public?
Well, I would say this overall about female athletes is that they have been fighting in the space to be heard, to be respected, and drawing attention to social injustice for a really long time. And even with all the things that were said about from male athletes about police brutality, it was the women that led them there, because it was the Minnesota Lynx and the WNBA players. They started that, when Philando Castile was killed, like, they started a lot of that conversation. Fast forward to Serena, who, much like a lot of athletes, especially after they've been able to achieve some things, we've seen her come into her own right before our eyes. Her and Venus are a big reason why there's equal prize. I mean, they are the reason why there's equal prize money at Wimbledon. Tennis is the closest we have come to seeing sort of male and female athletes treated equally, mm-hmm. In the same sport.
Right, right.
And a lot of that has to do with the Williams sisters and the fact that because of them, women's tennis has been a significantly bigger draw in terms of interest, in terms of a lot of different things, in this country. It's like, Serena and Venus have dominated this sport for basically 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I think because of her willingness to take on these fights, her willingness to speak out against police brutality, which she also did, and talking about how she, I think it was her nephew, how she became uncomfortable with him driving her car because of everything that she was seeing that was happening. The reaction to Serena is really no different than the reaction that we've seen whenever people of color have dared to publicly challenge a system. It is going to make people uncomfortable, and it's going to draw backlash. A lot of people just want athletes, especially black athletes, to be here purely for their entertainment. They don't want to hear about what it's like to actually live the black experience, or they want to pretend they don't live the black experience just because they're famous and they have money, when it's completely the opposite. And so for her to always be willing to kind of put herself to some degree on that firing squad, I think it just speaks to her maturity and just her growth and her willingness to be a role model and to be bigger than just being Serena Williams' greatest female tennis player of all time. She wants to be a great ambassador. She wants to be a great leader. She's now a mother. And without her, I don't know if there's enough or there would have been this much awareness about the struggles of black women when it comes to the mortality rate with pregnancy. She almost died. Yeah. And it turns out that's a significant problem in this country that is not at all limited by income status. It is happening across all income levels in all regions that black women are dying at a rate of childbirth that in childbirth at a rate that they had not seen since the 1850s. And that's scary to contemplate, but we would not know that had she not given voice to that and what she was going through. So I think she's incredible. And whether she ties or surpasses Margaret Court, who has, you know, the most slams or not, to me, she's still going to be the greatest female tennis player ever.
Yeah, I totally agree. Serena Williams is just a talk about, you know, Jemele Hill being a powerhouse in the world of media. Serena Williams is a powerhouse in the world of sports, not just female sports, but sports. And again, that is part two of my chat with media powerhouse Jemele Hill, as Hill is now a staff writer for The Atlantic, covering sports, race and politics and pop culture. Also launching that new podcast that I mentioned back in April entitled Jemele Hill is Unbothered. But, you know, Jemele brings up some really solid points there concerning Serena Williams and why people look at her with a kind of a side eye anytime she does speak out against something that she feels is wrong. And I also think this, you know, this is another point that I think Jemele was trying to make as well. I mean, she's also kind of looked at as the angry black woman at times as well. You know, and some people look at her and say, you know, stay in your lane, basically. And it's totally wrong. And there is certainly a racial and really sexist undertone when it comes to Serena Williams. What I love about her is that she is unapologetically her, and she is not going to temper her feelings when it comes to things that she feels are wrong just because it rubs people the wrong way. And I love that about Serena Williams. So really some insightful stuff from Jemele Hill there. And next week, you'll get Jemele Hill's thoughts on Colin Kaepernick and the kneeling situation in the National Football League, which has died down, especially when you look at this last season in the National Football League. Hill was going to comment on her thoughts on Colin Kaep and whether or not we will continue to see athletes speak up when it comes to inequality here in our nation and in our world. All right. Trust me, you don't want to miss that next week. All right. So Jemele's journey each and every Thursday on Morning Edition, as well as right here on WKAR's Current Sports. All right, let's hit our final break. The live stream is up. Oh boy, throw your hands up and just, you know, celebrate a little bit. At least for the last less than 20 minutes of the show, but it is up. Audio is working. Technology, man. Technology. When we come back, we'll welcome Connor Mathis to the studio as we talk about Game 6 of the NBA Finals and who's the king of the basketball world right now? Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. You know, to close out today's Thursday edition of the show, one man of the three-man weave engineering crew here at WKAR's Current Sports, Connor Mathis, who's been in every single day this week, actually. We've been trying to get to this conversation the entire week, really, Connor. And, you know, finally we've got a window to do that here. First off, Game 6, NBA Finals, tonight, Golden State Warriors, Toronto Raptors, the Raptors, and I wonder who Connor is rooting for right now. For anybody watching the the Facebook live stream right now, as he rocks his purple and red Toronto Raptors lid. The Raptors have an opportunity to close this thing out. The series sits at 3-2. They had an opportunity last game, ended up losing at the hands of the Warriors by 1 point. That was a game in which Kevin Durant tried to come back. He played in the first quarter, as we know, Connor, and ended up tearing his Achilles. He also, want to note this, he put out a message on his Instagram feed yesterday. He had surgery on that Achilles, and he is recovering. Now it's just a waiting game until we see the great Kevin Durant get out on the basketball court. So before we debate, because we've been trying to debate here on Current Sports, who is the king of the basketball world right now? Who is the best player on planet Earth? Is it Kawhi Leonard? Is it Kevin Durant? There are other names that you can make an argument for, but the reason why we're having this debate, because, you know, we look at the Warriors and the Raptors playing on this stage right now. First question, though, do the Raptors close this thing out tonight? Because I think they do, and I don't think that they just do close it out tonight, Connor. I think they do it emphatically. Emphatically against the Warriors. Beating the Warriors means that you win by at least double digits. I can see a 10-12 point win for the Toronto Raptors tonight.
I would agree. I think a 9-10 is kind of the range I'd be looking at. But, you know, it goes back to what I've said about the two Raptors losses in this series. Both have been the Golden State Warriors shooting absolutely lights out and the Raptors disappearing offensively for extensive stretches of the game. The Raptors had to shoot it extensively bad, and the Warriors had to shoot historically good for the Warriors to win by 1 point.
Right.
The other loss that Toronto has, again, they lost on a freak Iguodala three.
Yeah.
That sealed it.
Both now, Iguodala has hit some big-time shots in his career, but I hear you.
But he's not known as a sharp shooter
yeah.
that the rest of that team is. So to me, if I'm the Raptors, I'm not panicking at all. This is all right. They don't have Kevin Durant. Looney is done. He's more than likely not coming back.
No, he's done. They announced that earlier. He is not going to be playing any more basketball in this series. So you miss size, right? I mean, because Kevon Looney, I mean, he's a 6'11 guy. Kevin Durant is 6'9.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that size matters. And I'll say this as well. I've made this point before this series began. We are seeing the last of the Golden State Warriors dynasty. This is it. Kevin Durant, I don't think, is coming back. The Knicks are really, really interested in him. I think Andrew Bogut retires.
Oh, yeah.
Klay Thompson, who knows if he comes back. I just think that when Sean Livingston may retire as well, he's been rumored to be an old player.
Banged up.
Exactly. I just think that we are seeing, and dynasties usually last about 5 years, and that's what we've seen. This 5-year stretch of dominance has been fun to watch from the Golden State Warriors, but I think it ends tonight.
The other thing, too, is Toronto just has a much deeper bench. I mean, Quinn Cook this series has been stepping into his own. And I think in the future, Quinn Cook could be that really good sixth man for the Warriors. But
right
now, he's just some guy on the court.
Right.
And Toronto's bench is so deep. You can go to Van Fleet. You can go to Powell. You can go to Serge Ibaka, who is, I've said multiple times now in this series, has gone back to 2012, 2013 form.
He's been amazing.
He's been great.
He's been the X factor for this team, I think.
And now you're telling me there's no Kevon Looney?
Yeah.
And there's no Kevin Durant to check him in the paint? Andrew Bogut's going to check Serge Ibaka in the paint?
Right,
Draymond
exactly.
Green's going to check Serge Ibaka in the paint? If Serge Ibaka's on the court the same time Kawhi Leonard is, or the same time Marc Gasol is, that is a headache to guard. Or Pascal Siakam. I mean, he is that big X factor for me off the bench, in the paint, especially with the Warriors being so shorthanded and being so short, to be honest.
I'm with you. All right, let's get right to this as we have 9 minutes left. Connor, you believe that Kawhi Leonard right now is the best player in basketball. Now, logistically speaking, you're right, because Kevin Durant is hurt. He's not playing right now. So logistically speaking, if you want to get, you know, when you dive into the specifics of this, you're right now. But I'm talking about a healthy Kevin Durant, a healthy Kawhi Leonard. You take Kawhi.
Yep.
Why?
All right. So Kawhi has proven
And by the way, real quick, I'm sorry to cut you off, Connor. Oh, go ahead. Golden State's a 2.5-point favorite
tonight.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Too. How that's does ridiculous. Vegas know something we don't?
No. Just,
okay, I'm
no,
sorry. I'm, I cut
I'm
you
betting.
Off.
I'm betting on Toronto.
Okay, go ahead.
But no, Kawhi Leonard is probably one of the most balanced basketball players we've ever seen.
Yeah.
This season, this postseason especially, he has proven he can pull a team by himself. The big article that convinced me that it's Kawhi and not Kevin Durant is this article by Jesse Washington of the Undefeated, mm-hmm. and he lays out why Kawhi Leonard is the best player on the planet. He goes the first part of the article. He breaks down there's some people who thought Giannis was better than him. Kawhi proved that wrong. That series, Kawhi was by and large the better player. He made Giannis's life not the greatest and just beat him offensively, beat him defensively.
And I think that was a team effort, too, to slow down Giannis. They threw a lot of bodies at him, and he couldn't do anything. So,
but,
yeah.
Pound for pound, between the two of them, Kawhi got the edge there. Kawhi pulled the Raptors through that 76ers series. Kawhi, to some extent, pulled them through that Bucks series. So Kawhi, the main part of the argument is Kawhi is leading a team relatively, quote unquote, by himself. Even though he has good players
he has great players. See, I disagree with that.
Good.
Praised the role players for the Raptors.
Yes, but you can have good role players. And I don't see any great
superstars.
Like, that's what I mean I say great. I'm not talking. He doesn't have a Klay Thompson. He doesn't have But the one part of this article that really convinced me is they're comparing Kawhi and Kevin Durant. They have very similar stats. Both of them 26 hover around 26 points per game. Around the boards are there's a 2 rebound difference. Durant usually gets about 5 per game, where Kawhi gets 7 assists. It's a 2 difference.
Very
Durant,
close.
Durant with 5. And
the only
Kawhi
big differential that I see when comparing both of their stats is games played this season.
Yeah.
Because Kawhi Leonard had the injury and he sat out 22 games.
Now, this part of the article here says, that said, the greatness is also identified by circumstances and choices. KD chose to play with the Warriors, which would be like, quote, Jeff Bezos investing his billions with Warren Buffett. He has done his best work while playing with the least amount of pressure. He doesn't have to carry the full weight of leadership since the Warriors' power structure was already established when he arrived. Durant's numbers would still probably be great if he were the first, second, or third option like Kawhi Leonard. But basically what it was going into is that Durant doesn't have the full-blown pressure of the Warriors. If something goes wrong with Kevin Durant in a game where all the Warriors on the court, Klay Thompson's going to pick up his slack. Steph Curry's going to pick up his slack.
But this is the thing. I think that notion was a little bit debunked, Connor, when we saw this Warriors team struggle without Kevin Durant, not at first.
In the finals.
But in the finals, without Kevin Durant, this team is drastically different. We had this conversation on the show on Monday. Those who said that this Golden State Warriors team was not going to miss Kevin Durant, and there were some who went off the deep end and said that this team is actually better without Kevin Durant, are foolish. And they're idiotic, and they don't know basketball. This team is significantly better when you have Kevin Durant, who is a game changer no matter what team he's on.
Here's my counter to that argument. This Warriors team, I think Kevin Durant removed from it, is still getting to the finals through the Western
Conference.
Because
of just how the landscape of the league right now, Connor.
But you take off Kawhi Leonard from that Raptors team, they're not going past the 76ers.
They get to the playoffs, though.
They get to the playoffs, but they're not getting past. They're not getting past.
Kawhi Leonard in that third quarter, even though he did go in that fourth quarter run, right, where he just personally went on a 10-0 run to put the Raptors in position, in which I thought that they were going to win. And by the way, we did not bring him some earlier this week. Nick Nurse.
What was
let
that time
Golden out? State off the hook there. Golden State had a standing 8 count. They were about to get that knockout punch, and Nick Nurse bailed them out with that timeout, and then Steph Curry comes and hits his 3, and then Klay Thompson hits his 3, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, going back to my point, though, when it comes to that game, looking at that third quarter, Kawhi Leonard only scored like 1 or 2 points in that third quarter. He was lifted up by guys like Serge Ibaka, guys like Fred VanVleet, guys like Kawhi Leonard, guys like Danny Green. Though the supporting cast of the Raptors is pretty darn good. They're no Golden State Warriors, but what supporting cast is when you talk about the Warriors?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a team that has arguably 5 Hall of Famers on it, right?
But don't overlook the supporting cast that Kawhi also has around him.
I'm not saying he's completely alone. This is not a LeBron 07
Cavs
situation.
You can't win a championship alone.
This is not that situation. But what I'm saying is, if Kawhi Leonard disappears from the Toronto Raptors for a extended period of time, let's say Kawhi Leonard this season 30 games in a row, he's gone. He's not on the Raptors.
He missed 22.
But I'm talking in a row. Those are sprinkled.
He missed 22.
Those are sprinkled. That's not removing someone for an entire. What I'm saying is, if you take away Kawhi Leonard for 30 games in a row, and you then watch what the Raptors do, I don't think they're the same team. Kevin Durant away from the Warriors for 30 games in a row, I think the Warriors are just fine. They maybe dropped two games that they wouldn't drop.
No. I disagree with that. I think that the Warriors would be in more trouble because of the respective conferences they play in. The Warriors are in the West, where it is very rare where you get a chance to take a Wednesday night off. In the East, without Kawhi Leonard, they still, again, 22, it may not have been in a row, but missing 22 games for your superstar to miss that much time is still a significant amount of time, no matter where those absences are sprinkled over the course of an 82-game season. And still the Raptors were able to keep that boat afloat. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that also they play in the Eastern Conference. It's the Eastern Conference. The Detroit Pistons, my Detroit Pistons, my horrible Detroit Pistons made the playoffs in the Eastern Conference, Connor. So there are a lot of layers. I like to say that, right? There are a lot of layers to this conversation. But at the end of the day, when you look at these two players, as we come up with just a minute left here, Connor, Kevin Durant, when he's healthy, 6'9". He can do multiple things. Now, I'll give the edge when it comes to Kawhi in this regard. His defense is unreal. He made all defensive first team yet again this season. Both Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard were all NBA second team appearances this year. But 6'9", a 7-footer's wingspan. He moves like a guard. He can shoot over anybody. He is a nightmare to stop. You can't stop Kevin Durant. Kawhi, I can at least contain him to a degree because of his size.
Here's the reason why I still give Kawhi the edge. I will not argue with you that Kevin Durant is the best pure scorer in the NBA. That is unreal. Undisputed. There's no one who can touch him other than if LeBron has a comeback of the century kind of deal next year. Right. No one who can compare to him that. But Kawhi's overall game, his ability to play defense, even in when the Raptors were struggling in this finals and his offense wasn't quite there, he was still making defensive plays. He's still making the hustle plays. He's still keeping that composure together. So I still
love
Kawhi the edge.
I think he's becoming my favorite player in the league, man. So you can make an argument for both. Good stuff. Good stuff, Connor. All right. Enjoy Game 6 tonight. I'm going to check out the U.S. Open. Be easy, people.